Hello, listeners of the Mad Scientist Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Cogswell, joined here today by comedian Daniel Kozu. You may have read his work on The Hard Times in Infinite Worlds magazine or his book titled Lingeria. He now hosts the Extra Mundane Podcast, a show that is a huge amount of fun where he interviews and talks to cryptids, aliens, all the creatures we talk about here on the show today. Please go check it out. And then, Dan, we're just going to... Yeah, I'm excited to talk to you, man. I'm really stoked to have you on the show. So, Jake, roll the tape. Dan, welcome to the show.
Oh, man, thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. I was really excited to hear about your show because it's something that I've always thought would be so much fun.
Yeah,
in my head, I've thought that if we ever got, like, we've had people approach us and say, you know, we'll do like a alien show with you or whatever. And we're always like, no, that sounds dumb and whatever. But the one that I would love to do, or the one I think would be so funny, would be like a UFO hunter comedy show that shows them just like what it really is like to be a UFO hunter. You know, so like you're peeing in a Gatorade bottle at a truck stop. Wait, you know what I mean? Like, going to talk to people who are like, you know, anyways, that would be pretty fun. So tell us a little bit about your show.
Yeah, sure. It's called The Extra Mundane with Max Ward. And I play Max Ward. And it's sort of an Art Bell type character. So he hosts a paranormal interview show. But not only does he interview like ghost hunters and sort of the human aspect, but he also has on like the Mothman and Bigfoot and aliens to talk about their experience as well. And so that's and it's mostly improvised. I have on improv comedians, and I just kind of harass them with questions and force them into bizarre areas of their personalities. So we don't really I'll have a guy on, and I'll be like, okay, or we'll talk about it quickly beforehand and say, and I'll know he's the Mothman. And then that's really kind of it. And we'll just start talking. And so, and it goes into really strange places, and it's so much fun.
Man, that's another good idea for a podcast that was just attacking and berating people who do improv comedy. That might also be really fun. So your show is kind of an interesting take on, you know, the world of the weird. I mean, I think a lot of people take it. There's like two camps. There's people who take it way too seriously, and then people who don't take it seriously enough, you know. And I think by seriously enough, I mean, you know, there are real people that are involved in this. Their lives really are ruined sometimes by being involved in this subject. Like, you know, it's for a lot of people, it is like a religious experience. So what made you like, are you actually interested in these subjects?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I found like, I my best comedy comes from things I love. And that's why I write for The Hard Times, which is punk and metal and paranormal. I've been obsessed with my entire life. And that's where I can find comedy, because I like to come at it from a place of love and a place of respect. And I'm not looking to make people look stupid. I'm not trying to make people look dumb. But I also love comedy for people who don't seem to have much of a sense of humor, like punks and metalheads. There is, I mean, obviously The Hard Times is pretty big, and so that's why there are a lot of people who have a sense of humor about it, but they're kind of known for not. And that's another reason I really like this idea, was that it's sort of poking fun at people who don't typically like to have fun poked at them, but it is from a place of love.
Yeah, you know, it's actually really funny. So just literally like minutes before we got on the air here, as if we're going out live and this is not going to be carefully curated by Jake, you know, minutes before this came out, Jeremy Corbell, who some would say is playing a character, Jeremy Corbell came out and said, you know, or he put out this video that he got from someone on a Navy ship of a UFO supposedly dropping down into the ocean. And it's like a huge leak and everything else. And, you know, literally within like moments of that going up on Twitter, people were ripping each other's throats out, you know, like there, you know, Mick West, this famous skeptic, was like the first one to come out and be like, well, I think this might be a balloon. And people were like, it's not a balloon, you fucking idiot. Like, I'm gonna fucking kill you. Like, it gets so heated so quickly. And yeah, it's, people don't really have a sense of humor about this. I think because really it's become like, I actually think it's really similar to kind of the punk or metal or like just music scenes in general, where it's more than just the, you know, my favorite band of all time growing up was the Smashing Pumpkins. And Billy Corgan is a hilarious dick. You know, like I can laugh at that and know that Billy Corgan is like not really someone to look up to, right? But his music really spoke to me. It still really speaks to me. They're still my favorite band. But for a lot of people, it becomes their
personality.
Exactly. It becomes them.
Yeah. And that, yeah, and I think I was almost there at one point, like I think in your 20s. And that's the weird thing about the internet. You don't know if you're talking to like, I mean, I'm almost 40, but you don't know if you're talking to like a 20-year-old or even like a 16-year-old who's taking things way too seriously like I did. And so there's like no age on the internet. But when people get really mad, you're kind of picturing somebody like a peer. And it's really not sometimes. So
it's you're 100% correct. It's very rarely, you know, I'm 85. Like, you never know. No, it's true, though. You never know if you're talking to somebody who's, there have been a number of times on Twitter, especially where you get into it with someone who's into UFOs, who's just like constantly trolling you. And then you're like, wait a second, this person only seems to attack me when school is out. Oh, my God. You're like, I am fighting with a fifth grader, you know, and like the probably him calling me a poopy head should have been my first hint that something was off there. But
like on all these paranormal like subreddits that I follow and stuff, there's people who are just like somebody will post a video and be like, oh, this is like they'll just shoot it down immediately. And then you're like, why do you follow these? Like, why do you make your existence like to prove people wrong? We're just having fun with this. Of course, that's probably not a chupacabra crossing the street, but it's just fun to watch. And like for somebody like their existence is to swoop in and bring reality to you is just, oh, it's just, I don't know. It's sad for them, I guess.
It is interesting. I think it is very much so. Like the internet has been good for some things, but really, really, I think bad for, like, usually, you know, you read stories about like, I don't know, the 1800s or like the 1700s, where, you know, every town had like one cantankerous asshole. You know what I mean? And the internet has just allowed every town's cantankerous assholes to get together and like shout at you at once. And also, I think because like there is an inertia to the internet where, you know, we get this with podcast reviews. People only leave reviews if they really love you or they really hate you. You know, there's no one is leaving a review for us and being like, they're all right. I'll listen to them if there's nothing else going on. They're either like, this is my favorite podcast and we love them, or they're posting like, you know, you can tell how fat that guy is by the way he breathes on mic. And, you know, you're like, oh, my God, I'm seen.
This podcast was hysterical. One star. Like, what?
Right. Right. Or you just get people who don't know how a rating system works. You know, I thought poor meant great, like poor in spirit, the Beatitudes, right? Or the rich in spirit.
And that's like when I don't know if you're the same, but you dwell on the bad reviews and you kind of forget, like my book, it's not a bragging thing, but it for people who like humor is fantasy. I mean, it's people enjoy it. And so it like the few reviews that it did got were quite good, except I got like one star and I still think about it. I literally it was on Goodreads and I literally messaged them and I'm like, you gave it one star, but you didn't review it. Can you just tell me why you hated it? I won't tell anybody. I just need to know. And they never responded and I should have just let it go.
Oh, my God. No, it's really sometimes those reviews are really well thought out and written. You know, yeah. we had one at the beginning when we first started the show. We would occasionally dip into the politics a little bit. And, you know, Marie and I are coastal liberal elites. So that didn't go over super well. You know, we have like, I'm less liberal than, well, I don't know. Yeah, Marie, we have political beliefs of some kind. and they tend to lean more on the liberal side of things. And, you know, I think for a lot of people who listen to the paranormal, who are interested in this stuff, they do just want it to be funny and fun.
Yeah.
And that's where a show like yours, I think, is so good, because it lets it be fun and funny in not a kind of a heavy way, where when we make it fun and funnier, the way that we view it is we also always try to say, like, look, we like, this is hilarious that this guy is bringing, you know, people are paying this guy thousands of dollars to go on a UFO cruise with him. But like, that could be your grandma. You were like spending her Social Security check.
Yeah, I talked about that a lot with a producer that is helping me with the show, is where, because we wanted it to be fun, and we were like, well, because when you deal with paranormal stuff, it's really easy to kind of slip into the conspiracy theory stuff, which is fine. But we're like, right now with Q and the Capitol riot and everything, we decided to kind of stay away from that, because we were talking about doing like, have somebody from the Illuminati on, which we probably will do. But at this moment, we're like, this is just not the time. This is like, we really just kind of wanted to bring joy to people and be as silly as possible. And so we really are trying to stay away from politics in this, just at least for the time being. Cause it's, I mean, you can go anywhere for that right now. And we really kind of wanted to stick out as something a little different than what everybody else is talking about on Twitter.
Right. Yeah. And I'm glad you bring up the truth of QAnon. I'm just kidding. oh shit, what show did I sign up for?
Pizzagate is real.
Yeah, this is bad. When I guess so on the show itself there, right? Because there are a lot of figures, like Art Bell, for example, is a figure who I think a lot of people in UFO world, or kind of the paranormal world in general, view as sort of a hero, as someone that they really looked up to because they felt like he was the first like voice of reason. But when you listen to those old episodes, you know, it is sort of a comical character.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. And he did a good job of kind of steering away from, I mean, there's conspiracy theories, but like when George Norrie took over, which is actually where I kind of came in, I kind of knew, like, I knew Art Bell, and heard a few episodes, but I didn't start like listening religiously until George Norrie was there.
Yeah, no.
He tended to push the right leaning conspiracies a little bit more, and the it's all going to fall apart and you're going to need to bury gold in your backyard more than Art did, at least from what I remember.
No, yeah, Norrie, I think, and that's what's kind of interesting too, is I think a lot of fans consider or think of Norrie as like the downfall of the good, you know, the quality of Coast to Coast AM. And yeah, like you, that's the era that I got. That's when I listened, you know?
Yeah.
And really going back and listening to those older shows, you can kind of tell the difference and appreciate it and everything else. So what are some topics you have planned coming up?
Sure. Well, we have our first episode is out and we have Ghost Hunters, and I'm pulling a lot from Atlanta comedy. I'm in Atlanta. And so I'm pulling a lot of Atlanta comedians from a semi-famous improv stage here called Dad's Garage. And if you watch Archer, a few of the voices on Archer are from Dad's Garage and things like that. And so we have some their ghost hunters for it ended up. And that's kind of how the show goes when they arrive. It's very, I've already repeated this. Sorry. So we can cut this part out. Did I already state about how it's improv? Yeah, I did. So anyway. We'll cut that part out.
It's all good. You're fine. You're good.
When we started, all they told me was that they wanted to be ghost hunters, and that's all they were going to kind of tell me. And so it ended up morphing into how they were only animal ghost hunters. They were only hunting for animal ghosts, and then they became possessed by animals. And then we started like, and so it goes into kind of very strange areas where we just kind of play around. And so we have Vinnie Van Helsing is on the show, where he's the great, great, great grandson of Van Helsing. We got the Mothman. That was a big get. We had to work with his agent on that one, but we got the Mothman coming on.
Oh, man.
We have a medium and her ghost. They're going to be on soon. And we're working on getting the Florida Skunk Ape. We haven't gotten in contact with Bigfoot or Yeti yet, but the Florida Skunk Ape is interested. He's shown some interest. So we're tracking down Amelia Earhart.
Nice. Oh my goodness. Oh, that's so fun. You'll be able to get her to tell you where the hell that damn plane is. That'll be exciting. Oh man. You, I'm excited for when you guys get your UFO investigators on there. I've got some contacts. I got some people I can maybe put you in contact with.
I really appreciate it. We had a shape-shifting alien on already, but we haven't had any alien hunters on. So we should really get them together. Ish.
Oh my God. Yeah, absolutely. No, they find, you know, make their dreams come true. So the show, I think kind of, you know, it sounds really great. It's makes total sense. You're trying to make this more of a sort of funny angle to this stuff. What was your introduction to this subject as a kid? Was it Art Bell, or was it like, did you have a book? Was there a story that you remember being really freaked out at, you know, by as a kid?
I was obsessed with aliens, and I don't know. I feel like it was before the X-Files, because I remember the X-Files starting and I'm like, oh my God, I'm already knee deep in this. Mm-hmm. But I don't quite remember the timeline, but I think America kind of went through a alien obsession in the 90s, even before X-Files started, but I can't quite remember. But I actually bought Communion at a truck stop
it's the only place they sell it.
Yeah, on a road trip with my family, because it had like a UFO on the cover, and I assumed it was a fictional. Well, whether or not it's fictional is up to you, but I thought it was just a book, like a Michael Crichton type book.
Oh man,
scared the hell out of me, especially reading it like at night in a hotel in the middle of nowhere, like South Dakota. I think I was at that.
Oh my God, dude, South Dakota is scary on its own.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's. Oh my God, my wife tells a story of her and her mom went through South Dakota. This is totally unrelated to aliens, by the way. They went through South Dakota to visit a relative. They have like this 100-year-old relative who lives in the Dakotas, and he's like super sweet and nice and everything. But he just lives so far away from like every other member of their family that people don't often get out to visit him. So anyways, we lived in Minnesota for a while. We lived in the Twin Cities. So we were like the closest we were ever going to be probably to this guy's house. So they, you know, we went and visited him a couple times, and they went through South Dakota. I think he lives in South Dakota, but whatever. But they tell this story about stopping at a place called like the Corn Crutch. And it was like this like scary kind of like trucker bar on the side of the road. And my wife and her mom like go in, and they had to use the bathroom, and then like people were eyeing them, and they just jetted out of there. They were like, get out of the court. We got to get out of the crunch. And every time I mention how I want to go back to the Dakotas to go on like a road trip or something, my wife is like, we're not going to the Corn Crutch. We are not going to the Corn Crutch, Chris. Communion. I think Communion was. I remember being a kid and seeing the cover of Communion and being so freaked out by it. Mm-hmm. And like, I didn't read that book until I was in college, because I was like, it's too scary. Like, this is too intense for me, you know? And then, yeah. And then you read it and it's like, it is Communion.
I probably wouldn't have read it. I'm having really trouble with like my timeline, but yeah, I probably wouldn't have read it if I didn't think it was just, I led not a sheltered childhood, but I was ignorant maybe of a lot of things. And mm-hmm. So I didn't know that like kind of these scary things, like I kind of knew Stephen King. And so but I hadn't read it. So I didn't really know what horror was or what really anything scary kind of was. I probably wouldn't have read it had I kind of thought about it a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, it's funny, actually. I think as a kid, it's easy to kind of get your wires crossed with what is supposed to be horror and what is supposed to be comedy, especially because, you know, comedy and horror are in some ways like very similar, like not. We're getting into like deep philosophy here, but like, you know, they both kind of, you know, they both cause you to have reactions that you wouldn't normally have. And it's kind of like a spontaneous reaction. And some horror movies are so campy and silly that, you know, now as an adult, some of my favorite funny movies that I will watch were actually horror. You know, they were shot as horror movies in like the 60s. Right. So
but like even like I think the Signs by M. Night Shyamalan, it's not the greatest movie, but it scares the crap out of me. And it's kind of hysterical, like not in a bad way. Like his jokes are solid. And so I think nervous laughter is kind of the best for horror movies. If it can really make you laugh. Yeah.
It kind of hits a weird sweet spot, you know?
Yeah.
I remember when I was a kid, the first time my mom tried to get me to watch Young Frankenstein, I was too afraid. my mom was like, you're an idiot. What's wrong with you? Like, it's not scary. This is funny. And I'm like, this is good Frankenstein. You know, and I was freaked out. And then I finally watched it and like legitimately ended up peeing my pants. Because of how funny it was. Yeah, it's a weird thing. All right. So Communion was kind of the first thing that you really remember sticking out to you. Have you kept up with it over the years? Like, have you?
I read maybe the second one. I can't even remember the names anymore, but I did read another one like a couple years later. Like the internet hadn't quite existed. So you couldn't really figure out unless you really did a deep dive in like that there were more books and things like that, or I was just a moron. I don't know. But a few years later, I did try another one. I'm like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever read in my life. Like, it really didn't. Either I was older or it, like, and a lot of people say the other books don't really hold up as much.
The longer these subjects go, I think the more the older books stick around because they get the sheen almost of history to them, you know, or the patina of history. So that like looking at Communion, or let's not take Communion, because Communion is kind of its own interesting thing and there's a lot of history there and whatever. But like The Interrupted Journey was one of the first UFO books I ever read. That one is, you know, it's the first case of alien abduction and the first case that had hypnosis in it, the first case that had the car kind of shutting down in that same way. Like it really was, if we're thinking about like the kind of the mile markers on the road towards idiocy that we're on today, you know, it's an important stop, you know, it's their corn crutch. So with the Betty and Barney Hill case, people look back at it today and think this is such an important one. And the book with all of its errors and flaws or whatever, the case is so good because they're looking back at it and thinking, or kind of not remembering all of the other media and all the other stuff that was around at the time, you know? So like, if we think about like Communion, right? You know, the idea of like a grayish skinned alien with big eyes taking you into a ship or something, that had already long been a trope in the UFO world before Whitley Strieber wrote it. But that had been a trope as part of literature since like the 1800s.
Really?
Yeah. And so, you know, what we're really bad at, I think, as a culture is recognizing that a lot of these stories have, like, we've been telling the same like 25 stories, you know, since the beginning of time. You know, the idea of like, and that's why shows like Ancient Aliens get so popular. Those ideas become popular because people are like, did you know the Egyptians had stories about magical creatures pulling people out of their beds? And it's like, yeah, every single culture has ever had them. It's why we have them.
Right.
You know, because it just continued. No one, you know, everything is a reboot.
But in the same sense, I'd almost say like it's, people kind of say like, well, isn't it weird that once this guy said that he saw a saucer shaped craft, everybody started seeing saucer shaped crafts and flying saucer became a part of the vernacular. And it's like, well, yeah, but if you ask somebody to describe a duck and ask another person to describe a duck, they've both seen a duck, they're going to describe it the same way. So it's sort of, it could go either way.
Yeah, it becomes, well, that's what's so fun about watching or hearing those older stories. Is now, if you read The Interrupted Journey, like, okay, I tell you that this story is about aliens abducting Betty and Barney Hill. What do you think of? Like, describe how that happens.
It's very, like...
like, how do you think... Like, I guess what I mean is, if you had to write a scene describing the Betty... If all you knew is Betty and Barney Hill are driving down a road in New Hampshire and they get abducted by aliens, what do you think that looks like?
It would be exactly how, well, that's what exactly how I've seen it. the car starts flickering. The beam of light shoots down.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Fire in the Sky. That's pictured Fire in the Sky when you said the hills.
No, 100%, right? So the car stops because the aliens like zap it with a magnet or whatever. And then you know, Barney looks at Betty and is like, oh, my God. And then a light beam comes down. They fall asleep or whatever. They get abducted up. They're tested on with medical devices. They're shot back into the car. They go on their merry way. Betty and Barney Hill, the aliens set up a roadblock. They literally were like wearing hard hats and vests and were like, you know, they stopped them and then they took them out of the car by hand and walked them up their ship. Well, up a ramp to their ship.
Okay. Yeah. That's interesting how your memory, like, yeah, because I've heard that the Hill story several. Well, like, I haven't read that book, but of course, everybody's kind of heard it.
Well, the thing is that it's not really memory, right? It's like cultural memory.
Yeah.
You just now have an idea of what an abduction must look like. But that's not how it looked, right? In the 60s, an abduction looked like a traffic stop, you know? So it's a really fascinating thing how over time, and now in later years, the Hill story has kind of been morphed by people to say, no, it must have been like modern day events. They were just remembering it that way.
Right.
Or whatever. And it's the same thing with all these ancient alien theories or whatever. So, you know, I think to the argument of like, well, they all must have seen the duck, like maybe, but maybe they're all, maybe there's one guy lying about the duck at every bar in the country. And so everyone is like, I've seen a duck too, you know, and it's like, you haven't, you didn't see the duck, you know? So it's just a fascinating, like humans suck. Man, like, it's just rough.
But I don't know. And that's the thing, is I think we especially right now, you have to believe what you believe, and you're not allowed to not be solidified in that. You're not allowed to change your mind anymore. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you're not allowed to sort of say, well, like, to kind of hedge it and be like, well, I believe this, but I'm not certain of it. Like, and so like, I'm trying to think of how, like, do I think the alien abductions happened? Me, Dan, do I think? Maybe. I think the evidence is out there that it's possible, but I would be willing to go either way. My mind is open to both. And I think that's kind of, but right now we're like, no, you either believe the alien abductions happen or you don't. And if you do, then in some groups you're accepted, in some groups you're an outcast. And I did. And so I don't know.
No, so it's funny. We know what that the group of podcasters you ran into, I'm sorry to say, are in the group where, yeah, it's like when you know what, we're going back to the hard times here. It's like being into ska in high school,
which I was too.
Ska's the best. Ska still defines my life. I don't care what anybody says.
I was into Christian ska, so I was really special.
Oh my goodness, Christian ska. Oh my goodness. All right, we're gonna have to talk about that later, off the air. So, like, the only thing I think we can say definitively is that people are reporting UFO events, right? You know, but we don't know what they are. We don't know what they're caused by. And in some ways, you know, isn't it scarier? Again, if everyone is reporting, using your analogy, if a lot of people every year are reporting seeing a duck, isn't it scarier if there's no duck? Like, that's so much scarier, right? That means that somebody could make up something out of whole cloth and just push it hard enough and make people believe it and become the vectors of that misinformation.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's so much scarier than there actually being UFOs.
It's like, well, this one guy said he captured Bigfoot and he actually shaved a bear. So all right. Bigfoot are shaved bears. Like, no, that doesn't mean that there's not a weird branch of bipedal ape out there. Maybe it's not a human, like, but it, you don't, like, or a hairy, whatever, offshoot of humans, but it could be something we haven't discovered. Like, to say that we have the answer, like, I'm trying to think of how to put this, that somebody's theory is right. Like, no, maybe all of our theories are completely wrong. Maybe we are visited by something that abducts people. It may not be an alien. It may not be an interdimensional creature. It may not be the government. like it could be something, but to think somebody has the answer is, I think, hubris on our account to say
it is like, hubris.
Yeah. And that's no, like, because I'm not very religious anymore, but I have a spiritual, I have a spiritual side to me. And because I don't think that we've ever come up with even an ounce of what the universe has. And to say like, well, scientists are proving that God doesn't exist. And the Christians say, no, God was put in a male form and sent to Earth 2000 years ago. Like, I think there's something there. And I don't, I think it's stupid for us to think that we'll ever figure it out.
There, yeah, there's something, there is the null hypothesis that there's nothing there isn't the only, I think, skeptical argument to someone believing in these things.
Yeah.
There's a lot of other stuff that it could be that, again, are still worth investigating. But like we've been saying here, people get so entrenched in their camps and it becomes a part of their personality and their meaning for themselves, that by you going and saying, well, maybe, the most hate I think we've ever gotten on an episode, there's two of them. The first one was on Morgellons disease, or Morgellons, however you want to say it, which is this, like, it's like a made up, it's basically people with OCD who don't want to say that they have OCD. But so they like, they pick at their skin and they claim that there's like fibers coming out of their skin that the government put there. So that episode we've gotten so much hate for. And then the other one we did that we've got a lot of hate for, the other series, I guess, is on Robert Bigelow, who is this like, if you're trying to find like a member of the Illuminati who's like been hunting for UFOs this whole time, Robert Bigelow is like the rich guy who isn't allowed in the club. And so just has been like doing his own thing, you know? And so that guy is like responsible for like all, you know, in some ways he's like the root cause. Like he funded Art Bell back in the beginning. Like this guy is like the root of like modern paranormal everything in some ways. And yet he like, he is very, I don't even know what word I want to say. He's very sort of like not wishy-washy, but he, I think if you ask him, and maybe this is just me like lionizing this person that I think is actually quite cool. I would argue that if you asked him what he thought these things were, he would say, I have no idea, you know, and he's spent probably more money to search for them than anyone in history. You know, and but when we did the episode, people came out and were like, you know, people just attacked us because his myth, the mythos that he created around himself, has become so entrenched and so like such an important part of UFO lore that if you poke fun at or think that Robert Bigelow isn't really telling the truth or maybe isn't as amazing as people say he is, you're like, it's like attacking the Pope, you know, like it really is like attacking the damn Pope.
I feel like I should reach out to him to have him on the Extra Mundane. I might need to reach out to his people.
Oh God, yeah, you might just have to. It'd be pretty fun.
I think we're at this point where we've kind of plateaued almost. I feel like where the search has to be an answer at the end of your search. You're not allowed to just explore. We can't be Star Trek anymore, where you're just looking for strange new worlds and you always have to be looking for an answer or a cure. Or a definitive thing. You're not, and I think that's a fault now where we've become as a culture. And I don't know.
Yeah, it's really hard to I think justify. Like we've talked a lot about UFOs here, but let's look at ghosts, right? Ghosts is another good example, or even Bigfoot. Bigfoot's a good example of this too. The belief in Bigfoot is basically as old as the belief in UFOs, maybe even older in some ways. And yet Bigfoot has never had the same kind of gravitas that UFOs get. I think because Bigfoot isn't, you know, no one's come out and said Bigfoot is like shutting down our nuclear sites.
Right. Bigfoot's not putting microchips in our brains.
Right. Like Bigfoot isn't like abducting our people and like, you know, doing things to them in the night. So, but like Bigfoot stories, though, Bigfoot is an area, I think, where people are more comfortable just letting it go without an answer. And it's part of it, I think, is because with UFOs or with these other conspiracies, there's like they're like gritty, you know, it's like a they have this like aspect of like military secrets to them and whatever, you know. And so people are like, you have some people on Twitter, even like, you know, friend of the show, John Tenney, or even like the last podcast guys, or like a lot of people who just look at this stuff and say, maybe it's all just like a subconscious, or maybe it's like a higher consciousness sort of thing. You know, and so maybe it's like, you know, we've had visits, you know, for ages, we've talked about visiting the fairy realms and whatever. And like, maybe that's just all part of like what it means to be a human and like eat bad mushrooms, you know, like maybe that's just like a normal part of our experience. But on the other hand, you have some people who I think turn it more into kind of an actionable conspiracy thing. And that's the stuff you were saying you guys want to stay away from. I think that really is the difference there. But all right. So, okay.
Well, quickly to your point, I think the stakes are much higher for aliens than Bigfoot. Like if we captured a Bigfoot, our entire religious system wouldn't crumble underneath that knowledge. We'd be like, oh, that's weird. I can't believe it. Like, fine. But if aliens were definitively proven, a lot of like, we would have to rethink a lot of religious issues. It might not like crumble, but the fact that we are like definitively not alone in the universe, I think would cause a lot more problems in finding a Bigfoot.
I guess. I mean, you'd be surprised, though. There is a non-negligible component of UFO world that thinks that aliens are just angels and demons. And that just fits super nicely into like evangelicalism, you know? So like, I think most people would just be like, I don't think most people would care. Like, I don't know. Most people's daily lives would be far more affected by like, you know, Burger King coming out with like a you know, another six Whoppers for a dollar deal than like, you know, aliens coming down and being like, we're real. It's gonna be like, well, who cares? You know, aliens being real does nothing for my 401k. So, all right. What? I guess, what is your, if you had to come up with like your least favorite paranormal topic, or the one you think is the most silly, maybe, what do you think that is?
I'm trying to think. I honestly think, and I maybe I'll get some, but I really think that the silliest one is that there's some sort of shadow government. And Illuminati is a little different. You can define people with lots of wealth and power kind of trying to put their will on a society. I mean, honestly, I do think that's what billionaires do. I don't know if it has to be secret society or anything, but to say that there's like a shadow government, the government operates it's the worst machine ever created. And to think that the people who run that are somehow able to run some sort of secret operation within us is, I think, ridiculous. Like, I think corporations, and this is probably a left versus right thing, but I think corporations are much more able to control a population than a government ever could. A government has to do it by force. A corporation can do it through advertising and through media and through everything out. Like that's personally. So that's why I think the idea of a shadow government is silly.
Mm. So you've heard it here first, folks. Max Ward of the Extra Mundane Podcast, noted fan of the deep state and puppet of the Illuminati. I agree with you, especially having worked with and known people who have worked with the government and had really kind of like hearings, you know. The perfect, I think, encapsulation of like the ability of the average. Well, okay. I had a buddy who joined the military right out of college.
Okay.
You know, and like right out of high school. So I grew up in New York. And when I was in school, when I was like in middle school, 9/11 happened. Like the first day of sixth grade, 9/11 happened. And one of my good friends was really, really affected by it and wanted to kind of join the military. And, you know, really, I think that became kind of instilled in him with all of that and everything. And he told me once this story about one of the days he spent kind of training. Him and his army buddies got so bored that they decided to just like dare each other to do stuff. And one of the dares ended up with like somebody sitting on a fire ant mound.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And like that to me is like the perfect, you know, like there are people involved in the military, right? Like there are people involved in government and they're not good at keeping secrets or doing illegal stuff in secret. Like, you know, in the news right now, someone is in trouble for literally sending Venmo transactions to his like lady friends being like, you know, $100 for quote school end quote. And then like a grapefruit or whatever, like an eggplant emoji. You know what I mean? Like we're not like a smart people. We're just not smart generally. And so if there was a big secret like that, it would leak. Like, has no one involved in UFOs ever tried to plan a surprise party? It is impossible. Like, you can't. There's no surprises anymore, ever.
And like, and just the, I don't understand the end game. And if the end game is like to control the entire population, like they have done a terrible job at it. Like we have, and so. The end game, and that's why I guess I think a corporation, their end game is profit, and they're making profit. And that, like, I can see, and they would do anything. They would dump toxic waste to save money. They would try and make people, like, use subliminal messaging to try and get people to buy their product. That makes perfect sense to me. But I don't see an end game, or at least a successful end game, in some sort of shadow government.
There's no clear and obvious... Yeah, there's no clear and obvious goal. You know, it's not like in Watchmen where, you know, they fake the alien invasion to, you know, whatever the hell. That was a terrible ending. You know what I mean? This is a terrible ending. But yeah, I'm with you there. All right, cool. So kind of the deep state ones you think are silly, which means you are a prime target when the end days come. All right, cool. So, well, I mean, the show sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really excited to listen. Once you dig into some of those UFO things, I think it'll be a lot of fun there. I think it's going to be pretty sweet. What do you want listeners to know about the show? Like, what would you want listeners who are, you know, on the fence about listening? What's your pitch to them? Pitch my listeners here.
The Extra Mundane is just a lot of fun. If you like comedy or paranormal, I think you'll really enjoy it. You don't have to be an expert going into it. We actually start each show, like on our, when we have the Mothman on, I give a brief 2-minute rundown of who the Mothman is and what people believe in him, and then we go into the interview. So you actually learn a little bit right at the start of the show, and then it's really just a silly time. And it's I really, especially after this year, I really just wanted to put something out that was. It's not clean. I think there's a little bit of swearing. It's PG-13, but it's just, it's fun. And I really hope that people listen to it and I just am able to make them laugh for a little while.
It's also, it is also, I will say, listeners, very well produced. It's going to be a lot of fun. I think you should all go and listen and download it for sure. And give it a shot. Yeah. Well, listen, Dan, it was such a pleasure having you on here to talk to us today. Great conversation. Good times. People, again, my ghost. Oh, my God.
Oh, we forgot to tell people I had died 13 years ago.
Right, I'm sorry. Who's a ghost? my guest today was comedian Daniel Kozu. Again, his show is The Extra Mundane with Max Ward. Please check it out. I think it'll be a lot of fun. Currently available on Podbean all over the place through RSS feed and everything. And yeah, we'll be tweeting it out there. So please check it out for sure. Dan, thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a blast.